Welcome back to Coast, Linda Selden with us. Of course, we're going to take your phone calls this hour. Amazing how fast the night goes by with you, Linda.
Oh, thank you. It's fun. We have a lot to talk about, and it's comfortable. It's relaxed. I love working with you,
George. Ouija boards.
Yeah.
No. What do you think of them?
I love them, and I never used them as a child. I wasn't into any of the mystical or spooky things. But through my radio experience, I had run into a friend of mine I knew from high school. She heard me on the air one night, and she was into the Ouija board. So we started playing with it, and I didn't think anything of it. And then I had known I knew of an entity who had passed away in 1992, a rock star, who started channeling through me, and I thought, well, maybe I can bring him into the Ouija board. And sure enough, I have that contact. And the way that I find out that it's him is I ask a certain question, and it has to be a specific answer.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a code name that I get that verifies it's this one particular spirit. And they can be dangerous.
Yeah.
They can be
dangerous.
There's a lot of weird stuff that can happen. You see it on YouTube where people start bleeding and there's attacks. But I've been fortunate that I developed a technique where I can clean the board, protect myself. It drains potassium and other elements in the body, so we have to eat a piece of fruit or banana to replenish. It gives backaches when you're really working it because the energy that's being drawn out of the body.
I think in 2 weeks, a movie's coming out called Ouija.
I know. I don't know if I'm going to see it, though. It looks kind of spooky.
This is a different take. You know, on one hand, it could be a great Hollywood movie. On another, it may open up portals to people and things.
It might, and it might cause more danger. And this is where I get a little protective of the metaphysical world, because I know that there's danger out there that people don't understand, and it's not just going on a ghost hunt, or it's not just doing the Ouija board, or it's not just a Hasbro toy or whatever. There's real spirit out there that I myself, prior to that plane crash, I just saw the picture on Twitter that you posted. It's been a while since I've seen that plane. Prior to that incident, I didn't believe in any of this stuff. I was not interested in any of this. This was a world I would never touch. But living it, becoming spiritual, becoming psychic, becoming the healer, becoming the medium, I got deeper involved in my curiosity to tamper with it as long as I could stay protected. And I've had readings where there's like automatic writing with the Ouija board that I have taken copious notes. And I would say 85-90% of what was predicted came true.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's the best psychic ever went to.
That's amazing. All right, let's take some calls for you. You ready?
Sure.
Let's go to Karen in Sacramento, California. Welcome to the program. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Good to have you with us.
I was wondering, how can you tell whether or not you've been cursed?
There's an anxiety that is beyond your normal anxiety levels. We all have anxiety. We all have fear. Nobody's without any negative emotion. We're not made of steel. But you would know that no matter what you do, it's like when I was talking about being in the boxing ring, you cannot get out of the ring. You cannot get out of this membrane. You are stuck, and you feel like you're being almost like a suffocation. It's like you can't breathe. You can't get on track no matter what you do. But it's not like there's negativity, but the curses are 10 times the normal negativity. It's if you are really suffering, you will know. And it's not, I'm not talking just manic depression, bipolar, negativity from somebody backstabbing you. I mean, you would feel maybe like a horse feels with its reins on, that you can't move forward. You're just being constrained no matter which way you turn.
I've kind of felt that way for a large part of my life, and I kind of thought that would pass when a certain person died, but it didn't happen. And so I'm wondering, what do I do about this?
Well, you can always, reach me off there, and I can work with you because I know we've got a lot of people to talk to. But you would also find out from either, if you still have living parents, if they ever heard from relatives that there could have been a family curse. It might be generational, like we were talking in the first hour of the show. It could be something that you acquired, you know, through school or work. I don't know. If you came to me personally, I would assess the situation and tell you what I think or what you could do for a solution.
Okay, thanks, Karen. Good luck to you. We go to Sheila, Sheila now in Susanville, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Susan, go ahead. Sheila in Susanville.
Sheila?
Sheila, you with us? And she's not even there. Maybe it is Susan in Sheilaville. Who knows?
Yeah, I was just going to say, maybe you got it backwards. This is a new town.
Let's try Dana in Louisville, Kentucky, first-time caller. Hi, Dana, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Linda. Thanks for taking
my
call.
Sure.
Absolutely. Curses are real. I've always felt, like you said, that the cyclone, but mine is more like a roller coaster within a cyclone. I spoke with another spiritual advisor, psychic, and she paused for a second, and she said, who are these three women that want to kill you? So I know that there's some things coming from within the family and outside of the family. But then my thing is, I'm just wondering, you know, with, like you said, the energy being tampered with, like if someone has contempt or jealousy for you in their heart and they say, oh, I'm going to pray for you. Well, to me, it's almost like that prayer ends up becoming a curse because the intent, right?
Yeah, and George and I touched upon that earlier about God and prayer is still going to win out over the curse. No one can pray for the negative. No one's going to pray for your ill health. And prayer doesn't work that way. Prayer is talking to God, and meditation is listening to God, and God doesn't go the negative. God's not going to say, all right, Susie wishes Dana ill, so let's curse Dana. It doesn't work that way. If there was a ritual, if there was a spell using oils or feathers or, God forbid, sacrificing animals, there's some major tricks out there that would really cause some damage. But nobody's words, like I said earlier, like I was using, like if a kid at school wanted so-and-so to flunk the math test, and all of a sudden he did flunk the math test, but Susie wanted that, did she curse him? You know, it's a fine line. That's not really what the curse is. It might have been a coincidence, but that's not, she doesn't have that kind of power. You've got to have some type of ritual, some type of spell, some type of real trained hex work to really impact a curse on somebody.
Elijah in Denver. Hey, Elijah, go ahead.
Hi, my father told me once never to wish ill on somebody.
Well, that was good advice.
And there have been times when I sought revenge on somebody just by thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
I know one particular case in which a former supervisor committed suicide.
Oh, boy. What did you wish on the guy?
Well, it's not so much that I wish something on him. It's just that he had done something to me.
So you just kind of wanted to get even. You didn't expect him to die, right?
Right.
How do you know he didn't feel so guilty that he couldn't live with himself and he decided to off himself? Or maybe he had a history of doing things to other people and he'd been depressed or imbalanced or sad or whatever was going on with him, and that this was just a culmination of activities, and it just so happens you happen to have been around at that time. You can't say that your revengeful thoughts created the action for that man to take his life. You're not that powerful.
But this powerful, it surely didn't help him, though, did it?
No, I don't think it helped. I think it probably incurred more of his guilt or whatever he was ashamed of, whatever he did to the gentleman here, but I don't think that that was the actual reason for him to commit suicide. Unless you had done something with real ritual and real, spell work, then maybe it would have affected him a lot more deeply.
Let's go out to Warren in Sarasota, Florida now. Hi, Warren, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good, Warren. Thank you.
And Linda?
Linda,
I just
yes.
Wanted,
hi.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Linda. I just wanted to ask you your take on Satanism, the religion, and basically.
I've only known one human being that was a satanical worshiper, and it was not my
cup of tea.
Right. I'm trying to be gentle here.
Yeah, I know.
It's negative. It's scary. It's vindictive. It's real. It's dark. And like I said, I don't go to the dark side. I try to stay really light and help people on their path and really help people become the best they can be in their own human potential. To really pray, wish, and that's where they're worshiping, using spells and different types of real hex, commands, and witchcraft. But worshiping the devil so that all negative and evil will happen to people, places, or things that they want to hurt. It's real. I don't advise going there, but that's not for me to say for you. I personally get very uncomfortable around it.
Sheila has resurrected from Susanville, California. Hey, Sheila, go ahead.
Hi, good morning, you two. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Can you tell me how to turn around negativity in your life?
How do you do that, Linda?
Well, it depends on where it's coming from. If it's coming from family versus work-related, money issues, health issues, it depends. But first of all, I always start with prayer and ask that the whatever be removed or released and go back for its highest good so that my light or my health or my financial situation be for my highest good, whatever the will is of God for me that day. I then get into my candles, and I burn candles for myself all the time where I dress them with the appropriate oils and herbs and powders so that I can either have love in my life, peace in my life, new career opportunities in my life, removing negativity. I have negativity. I get a lot of negativity, like I said, just dealing with all the people I deal with. I never know who's going to be calling. And a lot of the times it takes me longer to push through a spell, meaning like, oh my God, I probably was in a negative cycle for a couple of weeks, not even knowing it because I was so stressed out. You have to become aware of it and then find solutions to deal with it. And I have a couple that I offer in my practice that may not be right for somebody else, but it's what works in what I've created through the years in my work.
Thank you. Do you deal primarily, Linda, with spirits or not?
No. I mean, in the candle work, I believe that there's real spirits in the candle and the oils and what we work with as far as entities are concerned. But if people call me for a psychic reading, I get into their persona or their energy and I pick up things around them. I wouldn't say I get the spirit per se, but I do get spirit guides. So I'll hear something around them or I'd be given a message to repeat to my client. And the only time I'm really dealing with the spirit would be when I'm channeling somebody from the other side, and it's only spirit because that entity is deceased. And yet I have a connection. I read on your website just the other day, you had a guest and had talked about channeling and said the same thing I do, that heaven is not these light years away, that it's all so close, that how can somebody be deceased? And yet I bring in these wonderful messages of hope and love and communication and closure. If it was so far away, how do people like myself or James Van Praagh or any of the other mediums do it if it's so far? And that's what's beautiful, like the spirit, that's the only spirit, a loving spirit that I'll bring in. If it's a negative spirit I have to work with, I think only once or twice in my career have I had anything so devastating that I was frightened. So I don't call upon negative spirits, and if they come in, like even on the Ouija board, I've had weird entities come in, and I knew how to combat it, make it go away, and take my hands off the planet, and withdraw the energy.
Okay, let's go to William now in Anaheim, California.
Local.
Hello, William. Hello. Go ahead.
Linda, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. And what about yourself?
Oh, you don't want to hear. But, George, I got to throw this out there.
Sure.
You deserve an honorary doctorate for all the knowledge you give us, people that aren't simple-minded but need thought, and you put it in there with so many different aspects of direction. I mean,
It's awesome.
Well, thank you. You call me Dr. Frankenstein, if you
want. Especially for Halloween.
Yeah, I go over my life with bipolar and self-medicating. And my first episode, I was suicidal and speaking out loud to God. And an orb appeared and floated around while I was speaking to God. Then I directed it. And I said, "Are you the meaning of the life? Give me a sign." I held my hand out, and it flew to my hand and it electrified my whole body. And I blew that moment of divine intervention. I think God gave divine intervention to my angel, and it was trying to save me, and I let demons still surround me. So I got negative forces I'm fighting. I've been off drugs for 3.5 years and alcohol for 8 months.
Good for you.
I'm suffering with suicidal ideations from my negative thoughts that run day and night. And I want to forgive. I want to forget. And it's just running me. Right, I go to a group 6 days a week trying to find positive affirmations. Retrograde sounds cool.
I like
the word retrograde. It's something I could look into.
It's a process, and you may need professional assistance as well, especially with the, you know, you've got all the definitions of what's going on, but sometimes you still need the right professional to help you on a psychological level that psychics cannot assist, and spirituality is another tool. It's not an end-all to all things and to all problems, but it certainly makes coping a lot more comfortable, and there's other ways of interpreting some of what you're going through, and it's hard to train your mind not to think negative. We all have negative thoughts, but it's learning how not to listen and buy into it. And eventually, especially if you're getting sober, you're going to open up and your mind will clear and you'll begin to see more of the light and not the dark.
And William, we're here 7 nights a week live. If you ever need us, we're as close as the phone for you.
I gotta go. I'm gonna make it to Christmas, and I'm gonna find a way to beat it.
You're gonna go beyond Christmas. You're gonna just keep going. Deal?
You know, George, I'm not good at it. I've had 5 attempts, and 3 were very serious.
Well, no more attempts.
I've been good at everything else I've done in my life, and I always use that for my positive affirmation.
Good for you.
I've done more good than bad.
All right, you keep it up, William. Stay in touch.
Doctor.
All right.
Thank you, Doctor.
Bye bye. It's tough, but he's hanging tough, isn't he?
He is hanging tough, and it's very difficult, and sometimes those demons and those negative thoughts are going to outweigh the positive, and the pain is definitely severe, and it's disheartening. We can't function during the day, but like people who get the suicidal thoughts, you know, suicide is a long-term solution for a short-term problem, and there's always a way to combat it, no matter how dark it gets and painful. There's help out there. There's the American Association of Suicide Prevention for anybody that's even thinking about it. There's plenty of suicide hotlines. And as much as the craziness comes in the mind, especially this time of year, from Halloween to Christmas.
That's true. That's one of the reasons we broadcast live on all these holidays. Linda, we're coming back with you and final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Here we are back with Linda Salvin. It's our last segment. Linda Watkins, explain Watkins.
Okay. You've posted the picture of the plane that I was in a crash in 1981, and I didn't understand. You can see the ramp, the river raft type of thing that we slid down to get off the plane. And when I came down that, I had this out-of-body experience where I felt 50 feet high on 50 feet tall on the left side of me, and I stand 5'8". And I was like a cyclops looking at life out of 2 different levels. And that sensation or feeling lasted for several months. During the first 3 weeks or so, I was talking to a friend, and I had been to one psychic in my life. And I thought that my friend told this woman everything about me, because I didn't understand that psychics really knew things. And she had sent me to this woman after the plane crash, said, "You should go see this woman," whatever her name was. And I said, okay. So I walk in, and this woman's back was to me, and she was sitting at a table, and she says, "You're a walk-in." And I said, "What's a walk-in?" She goes, "It's when you're close to death and the soul takes over the original body to learn and complete lessons that the original body wasn't going to do." And I said, "I was just in a plane crash." And then I sat down and I met this woman and we talked, and she gave me the book to read. She suggested I read Ruth Montgomery's book, Strangers Among Us, which I did. And it made total sense to me after a while of integrating all of the different changes I had gone through. I became a different personality that day. My body was never the same. Physically I'm the same. But the sensations of being detached from the soul I knew the thought process. I never had sage wisdom like I do. I mean, I didn't talk in terms of metaphysics or spirituality or God or anything like that at the level that and the depth that I've become through the years, but I know that that's because whatever walked in and it was explained to me was a psychic. I said, I'm not psychic, and then, of course, I became very psychic. So I have to believe that this woman knew something, and she opened the door to me to learn more about it. There's people on the planet that have near-death experiences, and a soul exchange will take place so that they can become more helpful to other people. And a lot of people call and say, oh, I think I'm a walk-in. Well, you can tell by the eyes that are real steady. You could tell by certain
mannerisms.
Yeah, the mannerisms, the voice, the memories. Memory is real hard for me before the plane crash. I mean, just aging, it gets hard. But, I mean, there's the distinctive me from before February 17th, 1981, and learning how to function with the changes was the struggle that I went through for about 6 or 7 years.
Okay, let's go back to final calls now. We go to JT in Glen Burnie, Maryland, east of the Rockies. JT, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Well, good morning, Linda, and good morning, George.
Morning.
George, the next time you talk to Catherine Austin Fitz, would you give her my sincere regards, please?
Okay.
I had the privilege of interviewing her and Michael Rupert back in 1998. Thank you very much for that.
Great people.
Now, my question. Yes, excellent.
And we lost Michael Rupert, of course. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes, that's all right. My question. You talked about the Kennedys and the curse that followed them, and I was wondering, is there a possibility, not only with them but with anybody, if you make a deal with the devil for, say, like wealth or power or something like that, you could get all of that and still be cursed? That's my question.
I see what you're saying. See, personally, I don't know that there's a way to make a deal with the devil because I can't see the devil. And it's not like I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to rise to fame and fortune at any expense, even if I have to sacrifice my children. I just don't think that anybody's going to do that. I could be wrong. I don't live that way. I don't think that that's how it occurred in the Kennedy clan. I have a feeling that they had like this, what I could define as the generational curse. I believe it came long before the Kennedys we knew in the 50s and 60s. And I think it had been with Joe prior to whatever, maybe his father or his mother's 3 or 4 generations before. I think he brought it in, and for whatever reason the planet had to go through this, I don't know. Those are the questions I don't even have answers to, but it's a good way to look at making the deal with the devil, but you're talking to the wrong person about that one. I just don't think that's how it worked.
Well, you know, I do think that some people try to cut the deal, but I'd prefer you cut it with the man upstairs, not the man downstairs.
Absolutely. I think you'll get further ahead. You may not get what you want, but you get what you need.
Amanda in Granada Hills, California now. Hello, Amanda. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Hi, Linda. Okay,
hi.
I actually called in intending to ask a question, and I realized I needed to ask another question. Can I ask 2 quick ones?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to know if you see me taking the trip I intend to take in December, and also, as far as curses go, I've been seeing a lot of 666s around me, I'm very into numbers. And it's freaking me out, and I'm wondering if you know what that is.
Well, 666, of course, is a sign of the devil, and it could just be a warning for you to watch where you're going or what's happening, or it just could be coincidental that you're starting to equate something negative in your life, but it doesn't mean that you're going to be, you know, cursed and in an accident and, you know, something terrible is going to happen. It's just that you're watching the numbers. Like, I watch for 1111, or I'll see 22 or 222 and 333, and I'll see the ascensions of 11. But when you see the 666, it could be, you know, that it's the sign of the devil, but it doesn't necessarily mean the devil's coming after you. as far as you taking a trip, is it, it feels like just around the Christmas holiday that you're going to be traveling, so I'm going to say yes, you go for 3 to 5 days.
I'm sorry, what?
That around the holiday time in December for about 3 to 5 days, it looks like you take a little trip.
I need a little trip too, probably. Probably indeed. Let's take some more calls here. Mike is in Richmond, Virginia. Hey, Mike, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Oh, George, it's so good to talk to you and Mrs. Howell. It's an extreme pleasure. I'm going to try to make this very quick. When I grew up, I remember my mother and her sisters and grandmother sitting around the table, and they had a string with a needle attached to it, and they would hold it over their palms and ask questions.
Yep.
Ending, like a pendulum. Depending on,
that's right.
It, depending on whether it did circles or X's, whereas a yes is a no's.
Uh-huh.
They never did the Ouija board that I'm aware of. But as a young child, I had to grow up with things like my Tinker Toys hovering and then slamming against the door or the wall and things like that.
You might have had a poltergeist. You might have had a spirit in the house. Your mom and your aunts, or if those were your aunts or relatives, were probably working with something that they believed in or that they had been trained in. I don't know because I'm not there. But what you're talking about, the needle and the thread or the string, that's like a pendulum. And there's a lot of ways to get yes and no answers using a pendulum. You can do it over sand. You can do it over your hand. You can do it on the table. And then you just decide which direction, the horizontal or vertical, is going to be your yes or no. And you can get answers that way. It works.
Well, growing up, I grew up in what would be now these days considered an abusive household. And when I was 11, we came home from my aunt's house. My father thought my mother had the house key with her. She thought he had the house key with him. It was about 1 a.m. in the morning. And, I mean, my dad just screamed my mother out. And as he was climbing through the window, I didn't mean to do it. I really didn't. But I thought, I hope you die. And halfway through the window, he had a major heart attack.
Oh, my God.
And we almost lost our home. I had to start work while he was at the hospital.
Did he die or did he recover from that?
He recovered from it, but and managed to stay with his job, which required a physical a physical training test every year.
Yeah.
That's as far as I wanted to go with that. And he managed a few more years and then had a second one 4 years later.
Did you feel guilty or responsible?
I wonder. I spent a lot of time in my home, in my room, praying. And like every night, I'd leave my mother a note in case I died during the night, telling her how much I loved her and what a great mother she was and everything, just in case, you know, during the night I passed away as a child. And
you were fearful that you were going to be taken for what you thought that you did, but I don't think that it's just like when I gave the example an hour ago about little Susie wishing Johnny had failed a test. You know, did she, and he fails the test, is it her wish or her command or her hexing him that caused it? I don't think you caused your father's condition. He had a condition, and it just happened to be at a time you were angry. And it's
got to be tough for a little boy to live with that.
Of course it is, because words are so powerful, and that's why he was feeling guilty and scared that he might die because he was going to be punished.
Mm-hmm.
But you've obviously survived all of this, and, you know, releasing that guilt and that shame and all of those feelings that you had. I know you lost your dad. But, you know, going through all of that, even though you said that you have to accept the fact that you didn't cause it, that you're not guilty, that you may have said something that you regret, even though it was ill-wishing, but I don't think our words are that powerful to cause that. Even though we get hurt, our parents can say things, friends can say things, our loved ones will say things out of anger and spite all the time, and it's abusive. Of course it is, but it's how we interpret it. And I think in your situation, especially being so young and vulnerable and naive and to witness something like that, that's where you internalized it. But I'm letting you know that you can let that go.
Why do you think these devastating accidents that occurred with you gave you these abilities?
Between the plane crash, getting hit by the fire truck, totaling the car, and having the white light experience, it's been like, and I've been in therapy over it, and I've gone to different healers and psychics and looking for answers like everybody else. And what I've come up with is I was indoctrinated, almost like initiated, as one of the light workers to help other people. Somebody had to do it, and it was the universe's way of waking me up to get me on a different path, taking my health education studies and knowledge, but as life changed more holistically and then into spiritual health, to open doors on a more metaphysical level, that not everybody gets into this field. And I'm just one of the pioneers that started psychic radio, and I keep working, and now I'm going into TV, and I have a message, and somehow I got chosen. I didn't go looking for it, as you can see. It happened to me. And just like psychiatrists and neurologists and other types of medical professionals will say, a lot of the times when you have shock to the body or to the brain, you're going to open up more spiritually and psychically. There's always a religious kind of experience that takes place, and I'm here to attest that that's true. I thought I was crazy. I thought I was hallucinating. I thought it couldn't be real, and the more I experienced it, the more real it was. The more I tested things, the more real it became. And I incorporated all of it into a gift rather than a curse, and embraced it and started helping people. So it became my work. It became my life's work.
It works, too, for you. Dominic in Tempe, Arizona. Dominic, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for the time.
Sure.
Sure.
I'm afraid to be an optimist. I've had
Why?
Things go very well for me in my life, and I feel like a person of light who will go back to the light, but over the last 5-10 years, anytime I feel like I'm the tuning fork of optimism or the vibration that things are going to start to track in line with what I write down and what I meditate on.
Are you afraid that the shoe's going to drop?
Well, it has a number of times. I told my dog a couple of years ago, this was a turning point, that we were on the right path, and I know it sounds crazy, but the dog was, we were simpatico, and maybe an hour later, she slipped the leash and was run over in front of me at 45 miles an hour while I was running out into traffic, and that's just one example of things that are very real and actual. Anytime I start to feel good about my circumstances, it is within a matter of hours, retracted very forcefully, and I'd like to know if you can help me find a way to feel good.
Well, I've heard this. I've experienced some of it. I can relate to some of it. I don't have all the answers for it, and sometimes it's just part of our own karma. Like here you had the love of a dog that you loved so much, and yet it was time for that dog to go to teach you lessons of your own love and strength and the grief that you feel. Well, losing an animal causes more grief sometimes than losing a human being. I know that pain, and that must have been horrible for you to go through, and it took a long time to recover from. But it's not like the big hand of God or the devil or something said, okay, he's going to walk the dog, now let's kill it. It didn't go that way. It was circumstance, and whatever startled the dog to cut from the leash or the collar, the dog is a dog, and ran out not knowing that there's traffic, and unfortunately it was hit. When things are going really well, a lot of us wonder, when is it going to stop? And a lot of times it does. Look at what happens in Hollywood. People are on runs with TV shows and record deals, and all of a sudden
nothing lasts forever.
No, it doesn't. But that's the roller coaster of life and learning how to ride the tide, just like the lunar eclipse and all the lunar tides that we experience at the ocean. Life is back and forth and up and down. There's no straight line. There's no straight line, and it's the challenges that we go through on an emotional and spiritual level to learn these lessons, and the more that we learn our lessons, the more spiritual we become, and the more spiritual we become, the more easy it is to transfer over when our time is up.
Let's see if we can get Kathy in from Cleveland. Kathy, go ahead.
Hello, George, am I on?
You are.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call, George and Linda. And George, I'm really, really sorry about the loss of your sister.
Thank you.
Okay. I have a really long story, and I'm going to try to sum it up real quick.
Let me tell you, I've only got a minute. Would you like me to hold you over for open lines?
That would probably be best, George.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay, we will do that. Kathy in Cleveland, just stick with us. And as far as you, my dear, Linda, thank you so much for being on the show. Would you give out your website and that toll-free number again?
Absolutely. People can call me toll-free and leave a message at 888-509-1077 or go to lindasalvin.com, LindaSalvin.com. George, it's been great. Thank you so much for having me as your guest.
Absolutely, and you take care. Linda Salvin, of course, our special guest. She's been on with us a couple times now, way back when we talked a lot about some of her earlier work and then her TV program, which she's working on. Just keep tracking her website. She'll have all those announcements for you. I'm going to come back in a moment. We've got an hour of open lines for you here on Coast to Coast AM. Plus, I'm going to ask you a question. How many of you seen the television show? It's on FX, American Horror Story. That's bizarre, especially the one that's going on now. It's called Freak Show. It's weird. We'll be back.